Chapter 11. Reacher came out of the food shack carrying four cups of coffee and a pressed cardboard tray. He fully expected three of them to be wasted. He fully expected the car to be gone. But it wasn't. It had moved off the pump, but it was waiting for him near the air hose in the interior vacuum, with its lights on and its engine running. Alan King was in the front passenger seat, and Karen Del Fuenzo was behind him. Don McQueen was out of the car, standing near the driver's door, looking cold and tired. Reacher had been right about his height and build. The guy was about 6 feet and slender, all arms and legs. Reacher carried the coffee across the two-lane and gave one of the cream and sugars to McQueen. Then he tracked around the hood and gave the other to Alan King. Then he opened Del Fuenzo's door and held out the third cup. He said, "Black, no sugar." Del Fuenzo hesitated a second, and then she took the cup. She said,
"Thank you. That's how I like it. How on earth did you know?"
13 words, which was 8 more than he had heard from her so far, ever since they had met. He thought, "Everyone knows thin women in their early 40s don't use cream or sugar." He said, "It was just a lucky guess."
"Thank you,"
she said again. He stepped over to the trash barrel next to the vacuum and dumped the cardboard tray. Don McQueen opened the driver's door for him like a little ceremony. He slid into the seat and put his coffee in the cup holder. McQueen got in behind him. Reacher found the lever and racked the seat back for leg room. It hit McQueen in the knees. Reacher looked at Alan King and said, "Why don't you trade places with Mr. McQueen? We've got the two tallest people, one behind the other here." King said,
"I always ride in front."
"Always?"
"Without exception."
So Reacher shrugged and adjusted the mirror and fastened his seatbelt and got himself comfortable. Then he nudged the lever into drive and touched the gas and eased out onto the two-lane and drove the 100 feet and took the ramp and got back on the highway. More proof they hadn't been driving 3 hours. No one had used the restroom. Sheriff Goodman clicked off his cell and said, "Now Missy Smith has got her phone shut down." Sorensen nodded.
"It's late. The civilians are asleep. Do you know where she lives?"
No answer from Goodman. Wariness in his silence.
"Obviously you know where she lives," Sorensen said. "She's been here forever. She's a well-known character. We'll have to go bang on her door before we go bang on the waitress's door."
Goodman said, "We can't go bang on Missy Smith's door, not in the middle of the night." Sorensen didn't answer that. She had taken a small sideways step, leftward from the red Mazda's driver's side flank, and she was looking at an angle through the gap between the cocktail lounge and the cinder block bar. She said,
"I can see the gas station from here, across the street."
Goodman said, "So?"
"Anyone over there could see me."
"You thinking about witnesses? Well, we'd be pretty lucky if some long-haul trucker was pumping his gas at the exact minute our guys arrived here and took off again, and was gazing in the right direction, and was paying close attention instead of scratching his butt. And anyway, how would we find him?"
"No, I'm thinking the gas station might have cameras. Maybe wide-angle, like fish eyes. They might see over here."
Goodman said nothing.
"Does the gas station have cameras?"
"I don't know," Goodman said.
"It might,"
Sorensen said.
"Some of those big trucks take 100 gallons. And times are hard right now. Drivers might be tempted to take off before paying. Oil companies wouldn't like that. They might take defensive measures."
"We should go find out."
"We will,"
Sorensen said.
"And then we'll go bang on Missy Smith's door. Don't think we won't. The old gal can sleep a little more, but not forever."
Reacher was an adequate driver, but nothing more than that. Physically, his body worked only 2 ways, either extremely slow or extremely fast. Most of the time, he rumbled along with typical big man languor, often appearing quiet and lazy, sometimes appearing positively comatose. Then, if necessary, he could explode into furious action for as long as it took. A blur of hands and feet, and then he would lapse back into torpor. He had no middle setting. and a middle setting was what good driving needed. Action and reaction had to be prompt but controlled, alert but measured, rapid but considered. And it was hard for Reacher to identify that kind of middle ground. Typically, he found himself either twitching at a danger 200 yards ahead or ignoring it completely on the grounds that it might go away by itself. He had never killed or injured anyone with a car, except deliberately. But he was a realistic man and didn't kid himself. His driving was much worse than average. But, as promised, the interstate was straight and wide, back up to 3 lanes again by that point, and the big soft Chevrolet held its line very well. Nighttime traffic was very light, and neither action nor reaction was much called for. In fact, the biggest challenge was to stay awake. But Reacher was good at that. He could grind along at some basic level of consciousness more or less forever. He kept both hands on the wheel, 10 and 2, and he checked his mirrors regularly every 20 or so seconds, first the passenger door, then the windshield mirror, then the driver's door, then the windshield again. Behind his right shoulder, Karen Del Fuenzo sat awake but silent, tense and anxious. And next to her, Reacher could hear Don McQueen breathing slow. Not quite asleep, but not quite awake either. Alan King was awake in the passenger seat, looking mute and morose and a little preoccupied. His head was half turned, so he could see the road ahead and Reacher together. And the speedometer, too, Reacher thought. So Reacher drove on, at an approximately legal speed, with the crystal pendant on the key tapping him on the knee from time to time as the car rocked and swayed. It turned out that the gas station had 4 cameras, all of them monochrome, none of them color. They fed a hard disk recorder located on a shelf in the booth behind the register, right next to the cigarettes. The 4 separate feeds were displayed in real time on a quad-split LCD screen to the left of the cash drawer. 3 of the cameras were of no interest to Sorensen. The 1st and the 2nd were mounted low down at the vehicle entrance and exit to capture plate numbers. They were zoomed in too tight to show any background. The 3rd camera was mounted in the ceiling of the cashier's booth itself, high up behind the guy's right shoulder, to make sure he wasn't ripping the place off. Standard practice in a cash business. Trust, but verify. But the 4th camera was better. Marginally. It was a black glass hemisphere mounted high on a bracket halfway up the sign pole. It was dialed back to a wide-angle view of the whole property. For insurance purposes, the cashier said. If 2 semi-trucks backed up and got their trailers tangled, it was useful to know which one had moved first. If someone stole gas or diesel, it was useful to show the court a composite narrative. The plate number entering, the guy pumping, the guy driving away, the plate number leaving. The field of view from the 4th camera was wide enough to show the County 2 lane heading north and south, and the gravel patch beyond its far shoulder in front of the cinder block bar, and the cinder block bar itself, and part of Missy Smith's cocktail lounge, and the gap between those 2 buildings. The way the fishbowl distortion tilted the picture made it look like the camera was peering more or less horizontally into the gap. Bright pools of light were visible on the live feed, right at the edge of the shot, from the deputy's parked vehicles. Picture quality was not great. The nighttime world was shown in shades of gray. Lights from passing cars bled and smeared and fluoresced and lagged their source's lateral movement. But it was better than nothing. Maximum effort. Gamble.
Okay, Sorensen said. Show me how to rewind this thing.